Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Almirall's half year 2011 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star and one on your telephones. I must advise you that the call is being recorded today, the 28th of July, 2011. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Jordi Molina. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, Sheila, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us to the first half 2011 results conference. This is Jordi Molina, Investor Relations. Joining us today in this event, we have Eduardo Sánchez, Chief Executive Officer, Daniel Martínez, Chief Financial Officer, Luciano Conde, Chief Operating Officer, and Bertil Lindmark, Chief Scientific Officer. I now hand over to Eduardo for the opening remarks, and at the end of the addressements, we will open a Q&A session.
Okay, thank you, Jordi, and good morning, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining us today. As you have seen, we have achieved our financial targets in the first half of the year in a challenging environment, and our top line as well as bottom line evolution have improved versus Q1. It's important to highlight that R&D expenses will actually be higher during the second half of the year as we start the combination, sorry, the phase III of the combination and formoterol. Our strong financial fundamentals continue. We keep a solid balance position with leverage capacity, and our free cash flow generation remains steady. Moving on to the next page, let me share with you the key highlights year to date. From a corporate development perspective, we have been active with the partnership of Aclidinium in Japan and the agreement that we have made recently with Nycomed for roflumilast in Spain. Also, there are ongoing negotiations for partnering Aclidinium bromide in Europe, as we have stated in the past. Our product launches are also progressing as planned with the international rollout of Sativex and Actikerall. Additionally, later this year, we expect to be in a position to launch roflumilast, which we expect will become a key product in the years to come in Spain. I will come back later on the comments related to the recent healthcare reform in Spain. In the meantime, let me move to some of the other related moves, news, particularly when it comes to the pipeline. Aclidinium has been filed in the U.S. and Europe as planned, and further data will be presented at ERS in September in Amsterdam. Linaclotide is also on track for the European filing in the second part of this year, so we envisage altogether that 2012 is going to be a key year for these two products. Following also the general annual assembly that we had in May, a dividend of 0.29 euros, the highest range in our payout policy, was approved and distributed during the month of June, and this is duly reflected in our cash flow statement. I would like now to hand over to Daniel, who was appointed as new CFO earlier this month, and he will walk you through the financial insights on these half year results. I'll be back at the end for some additional comments.
Thank you, Eduardo. It's a pleasure to kick off as CFO in this event today. Let me share with you a few elements of our financial performance during the first half of 2011. Sales are down 9% as anticipated, reflecting the impact of the 2010 reforms and the generic competition. Luciano will provide you with further details later on the sales segmentation and product trends. Gross profit has improved half percentage point despite the uneven levels of pricing versus the first half of 2010, driven by growth of our international business. On the operating expense lines, R&D is still below last year, as we expect a heavier second half of the year linked to the phase III initiation of Aclidinium plus formoterol. Sales and G&A expense of the period reflects a material reduction of 2.3%, driven by cost discipline and savings, in line with our target of 7 million euros in savings. Both EBIT and EBITDA have greatly improved the trend seen in Q1, in a context of continued operational cost containment and temporarily lower R&D. We have higher financial expenses linked to temporary adverse impact of exchange rates. Net income and normalized net income total 67.8 million and 68.6 million respectively, also improving the trends seen in the first quarter. Moving to the next page, here is a comparison of the second quarter versus the same period of last year. Worthwhile to highlight the improvement in gross margins of 230 basis points in a context of uneven pricing comparison. Also, the temporary evolution of R&D has removed pressures at the EBIT level and the bottom line. Let's descend to the other income details. As you see, revenues under co-development agreements had a flattish evolution. The key component that explains the lowering trend in other income is revenues under co-promotion agreements. Here, we see how Actonel is pulling back due to generic competition, and Combrisa is in an early ramping up stage, still unable to fully compensate it. By the way, once launched in Q4, Proflumilast performance will be booked in this item. Let's move to the balance sheet. As Eduardo commented, we keep solid fundamentals. Equity is robust, representing nearly 55%, and net debt is very low after the dividend distribution in early June, 21.8 million euros, representing 0.1 times the EBITDA of 2010. Moving to cash flow, we see another quarter of solid cash generation, only hindered by lower profit before taxes and changes in working capital driven by the expected higher accounts receivables. We keep investing in maintenance capex and intangible capex related to our corporate development projects, and as commented, dividend was distributed this quarter. All in all, our financial performance during the first half has been as anticipated, and we keep a solid balance sheet and a steady cash flow generation. With this, I hand over to Luciano.
Thank you, Daniel. Good morning to everybody. Let me turn to the sales segmentation by geography during the period. International sales now represents 48% of the business, with a stronger growth in Europe, excluding Spain, versus quarter one. We have been year-to-date 3.3%, but you remember that in the first quarter, we were growing 0.1%. In fact, if we compare growth in homogeneous terms with the prior half year in Europe, excluding Spain, the growth is 6.5%. However, the burden of increased health system contributions are saving 3.2 points of our growth. Also, on the positive side, growth has been regaining in Asia, America, and Africa versus the first quarter, led basically by improved sales in Mexico, Japan, and North America. In the flip side, Spanish sales continued its anticipated decline following the full-blown impact of the measures stated last year and the increasing pressure of regional governments fostering the prescriptions of cheaper generics. The corporate sales reflect the phasing out of our toll manufacturing business. This is an element that affects our top line but has minimal impact on the bottom line. This business will continue its decline during the rest of the year. Let's move on to our key products. Our two leading compounds in sales come from our own R&D and show a positive performance year to date. Avastin has recovered its ground. In the first quarter, the evolution was at minus 11.5%, and it has moved now to plus 2% year to date. This result is related to sales in Japan and the high pollinic season in Europe, particularly in France and Italy. Meanwhile, Almogran has accelerated its growth to a double-digit figure thanks to the US, Italy, and Spain. Also, I would like to highlight the sustained performance of our dermatological franchise, Valium, Solaris, and Decodan. With the introduction of Actikeral, we are now the leading company in Europe in the acne keratosis indication, offering non-invasive solutions to patients affected by this precancerous condition. Toctino, Combrisa, Silodex, and Sativex, launched in the last 12 months, are evolving positively and contributing to the rejuvenation of our portfolio. In relation with the product we sell only in Spain, you have to consider that the comparison with previous year is not yet even, since the 7.5 rebate was not yet instituted in the first half of 2010. Anyhow, I would like to highlight the excellent performance of Tesavel Efitib, and a staggering plus 66%. This has been done under the harsh condition of the Spanish market. We are convinced the franchise is a key asset for the short-term evolution of our business in Spain. The Parapres franchise has also shown a relevant positive evolution. Other launches planned for this year in Spain include Solaris and the second brand of Proflumilast, as well as Sativex in Sweden. In summary, a mixed bag of situations that fairly depict the transition status of our portfolio pre-launch of the new opportunities. We continue to make good progress in our key strategic therapeutic categories. Respiratory show a great improvement versus quarter one, mainly driven by Avastin recovery, and gastrointestinal was up to 6.1%. Derma edged down slightly due to the increase in Germany of the health tax from 6 to 16%. We are reinforcing this therapeutic category with the launch of Picaral in the UK and Germany, with sales impact starting next quarter. I would like to highlight that excluding the impact of Prevencore, the rest of the cardiovascular franchise show a stable evolution. The product launches slide is an update of our latest launches. This product will contribute to strengthen our presence in one of our core therapeutic areas, derma, as well as to foster and rejuvenate the strength of our Spanish franchises. In the case of Sativex, note that the launch in Germany was done immediately after the German parliament approved the change in the law to allow the commercialization of this new type of products. This has been a swift and unusual market access success. We have also started to roll out Sativex in Denmark. The lower part of the slide shows the new product that we expect before the end of the year at domestic and international level as we move forward into 2012, warming up for the launches of Aclidinium and Linaclotide. And with these comments, I will pass the word to Bertie.
Thanks, Luciano. As you all know, this year we'll have two major filings. We're really proud that Aclidinium bromide monotherapy has been filed in the U.S. and EU as promised. This is a great achievement by the combined team of Forrest and Almirall. The second is the linaclotide file. This is a pan-European first-in-class opportunity in IBS-C with high unmet need and in which no specific treatments have been approved by the EMA. Almirall is progressing to file linaclotide in Europe in the second half of 2011. We believe Almirall has a fantastic opportunity with Aclidinium bromide and the Aclidinium bromide formoterol combination in COPD, which is starting phase 3 in this fall. We will present further Aclidinium data at ERS, the European Respiratory Society in Amsterdam, 24th to 28th of September, and linaclotide data at the UEGW, the United European Gastroenterology Week in Stockholm, 22nd to 26th of October. Our late-stage pipeline completes with three R&D projects in phase 3. These include the fixed-dose combination of Aclidinium bromide plus formoterol twice daily in COPD, and LAS41007 for non-melanoma skin cancer. Also, after the approval of Sativex in the indication of MS plasticity, two new phase 3 trials in the US and Europe are ongoing for the indication of oncological pain. Following regulatory interaction in the US and EU, Almirall is progressing with additional phase 2 studies of albuterol. Our once-daily LAMA, which we call LAS977 as well, combined with an inhaled corticosteroid. Our mid-stage pipeline complements with one dermatological compound in phase 2 for infected eczema and psoriasis, as well as the DHODH compound. Lastly, our latest addition, AMABA, that is progressing as planned. Finally, this is our news flow calendar in which we highlight the forthcoming ERS Congress, the start of phase 3 in the Aclidinium combo, and filing of linaclotide in Europe. I now hand over to Eduardo for the final remarks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bertil. First of all, looking into the projected key deliverables for the rest of the year, we plan to launch Sativex in Sweden and Roflumilas and Solaris in Spain. On the corporate development side, we continue our efforts to seek new licenses around the core therapies and explore acquisition opportunities. Finally, and following the recent filings of Aclidinium in the US and Europe, the filing of linaclotide is well on track to be completed during the rest of this year. So having said that, let me also make a few comments about the situation with the guidance. Actually, until last week, we were planning for this meeting to be able to be in a position to confirm the guidance for the rest of the year. However, today, things have changed a little bit, and to a tough environment that had mostly been anticipated, we are now adding the pressures from a potential new healthcare reform in Spain, which is negotiated right now, and we don't know yet where this is going to end up. So in this context, when it comes to Almirall's guidance for 2011, we would like to put that on hold, as details are not yet complete, and the timing of its implementation is still uncertain. And we will obviously come back once we have more clarity on the final shape that this additional healthcare reform may take. But having said that, let me share a couple of reflections. If we look into the details of what has been announced up to now, there are particularly two elements that are obviously having a negative impact. On the one hand is the price reduction of products with more than 10 years in the market, and on the other hand is the let's call it, acceleration of implementation of reference pricing. When we look at our portfolio, we are more potentially affected by the latter than by the former. In other words, the reference price acceleration. And this means that in any case, this does not change the midterm fundamentals for Almiral, because, again, it's accelerating, not changing something that was not somehow expected in our five-year horizon. So, again, I want to insist on this term because, once more, we believe that, depending, obviously, on what could be the final form of this healthcare reform, we still think that we have solid fundamentals for the midterm linked to the transition and evolution of our portfolio, and we want to remain optimistic around that aspect. So, again, having said that, we keep the guidance on hold for the time being and more information to come once we have clarity on the final situation. With this, let me pass the microphone to Jordi.
Okay, thank you very much to all. Shayla, back to you for Q&A, please.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from Joe German from Citi. Please ask your question.
Hi there. Good morning, everyone. It's Joe here from Citi. A couple of questions, if I can. Firstly, just to get one out on your last comments, Eduardo. I mean, in terms of, you talk on the slides about ongoing conversations between pharma industry and the government regarding these new proposed changes. Is there any sort of real chance that there could be some changes to what has been proposed, or are those sort of ongoing discussions just more about when, you know, understanding what it is that has been proposed and the timing of those implementations? I'm wondering whether there could be perhaps any sense that there is some relief from those proposed sort of new austerity measures. And clearly, I understand it's too early for you to give any sense of guidance. But if you look particularly on that sort of accelerated implementation of reference pricing and this push to substitute generics, are you able to give us any sense of sort of what proportion of your sales may be exposed to this type of issue? That was my first question. And then just one other on the pipeline. Just, you know, great news that you filed, obviously, Aclidinium in Europe, and it's also gone through in the U.S. Bertil, can you give us any sense of what we should be, what would be a sensible assumption in terms of regulatory review timings in both geographies? Should we be looking at sort of one cycle, two cycle in the U.S.? Is there any reason why it might be faster or slower than usual in Europe?
Right. Okay, let me address the first part of the question, and I will let Bertil address the second part related to the evolution of the pipeline. Now, when it comes to Spain, I mean, let's face it, something will happen. So it is not that we are going to be able to, through negotiations, to remove everything. We were already contemplating in our evolution for this year the increased measures that the regional autonomies are taking in Spain, and felt that even though that was not initially planned, that we could still manage that within the guidance that we provided for this year. And again, that was the situation up to last week. We feel that right now, through the conversations that are taking place between the industry and the government, that we can put on the table certain elements that could become very relevant towards making a final decision that we feel cannot be appropriately considered when making those decisions, and that actually are more detrimental to the industry while not necessarily bringing benefits, or at least the intended economic benefits to the Spanish government. So we feel again that something will happen, but we strongly feel that probably not as big as what initially announced. And the reason why I'm saying that is because if we look at the history of the sort of measures that have been implemented over the last few years, what was announced at the beginning was always much bigger than what was coming out at the end. So I keep the fingers crossed and working hard on the negotiation and discussions taking place with the ministry, but I would like to believe that there should be sensitivity at the other end on some of the arguments that we are putting on the table that, as I said, are probably far more detrimental to the industry without necessarily gaining a full benefit of those savings by the government. Now, having said all that, I had to resist at this point giving you much more specifics in terms of, you know, details, because, again, I do not know what finally may be implemented, and it is too early to get into elements of what we may be doing about that. But let me perhaps make a couple of comments. I think that, first of all, as a company, we have a strong track record of managing aggressively the P&L and adapting ourselves to the changes in the external environment. Over the last 2 years, or I would say since 2009, we have been significantly reducing our SG&A by almost 10%, or about 35 million euros over a two-year period. So that, I think that you know, we will still continue to look aggressively. Having said that, I think we also need to make sure that we do not diminish the set of capabilities that will be critical for the introduction of our new products. And to that extent, I think also the partnering efforts, particularly in Europe, are going to be very key, so we can modulate the amount of investment that we do from our side versus the amount of investment to be done by European partners that can help to ensure that altogether we have a competitive share of voice and that we can maximize the potential of those molecules. So probably that's what I can say at this point. Bertil, you want to comment?
Well, regarding the filing, I guess we're really, really happy to have filed both in the U.S. And Europe. We believe that we have a strong file. We believe that the European timelines will be quote-unquote normal timelines, and we have conservatively guided that we do believe that we'll get a two-cycle review. I guess behind that, we would still hope that we will get one-cycle review, and one of the reasons for believing is that we have done the phase three with a fully industrialized inhaler, which is a difference compared to many other files. I guess we'll see the first questions from the FDA in October, and we'll then know more about the sentiments in the agency and in the EMA. We'll see the first questions in December. But having said that, I think the file is both territories is strong, and the data are consistent. So from a clinical point of view and from a CMC point of view, I think we have all the data we need. And then we'll see what the agency is saying in the end.
That's great. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Kerry Holford from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Good morning. Many thanks. A couple of quick questions. Firstly, on the Spanish healthcare reform again, I'm afraid. You mentioned about the reference pricing proposals having a large impact. But what about the proposals for physicians in Spain to only prescribe drugs under the generic name going forward? Isn't this the bigger long-term concern? And couldn't this make the current model in Spain of multiple brands obsolete over time? And isn't that the bigger concern for a company like Almirall? Then secondly, on respiratory, could you just detail what we should be expecting to see at ERS on Aclira? And also, are you able to say anything more about your MABA at this time? Is it a once daily, twice daily product? Many thanks.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Gary. And again, let me perhaps take the first one. We'll leave respiratory for Bertil, and maybe Luciano also can help me on the Spanish situation. Potentially this one on prescribing by active principle is the one measure that we feel can indeed have a significant change in the how the market operates in Spain without necessarily bringing all the benefits that Ministry of Health may be seeking. So we feel that in this one, indeed, you know, the mid-long-term impact could be relevant in terms of the change in the business model. Having said that, in terms of being able to maintain share of voice, what could happen in a worst-case scenario is that perhaps more than resorting to co-marketing as a way of partnering, the model may move more into co-promotion. Actually, it's already happening with some of the latest products that have been introduced in the market, and we have a situation like this we had in the past with Actonel. So again, this is one of the areas where that has been the subject of substantial debate. Again, I don't think that necessarily it will rule out the potential for partnering in Spain, but it may imply changes in the way of collaborating and moving more perhaps into the direction of co-promotion than co-marketing. But Luciano, you want to add to that?
Well, it is unclear at this stage what would this mean in practice, because it's not clear if the generic name will only be applied when the product will become generic, or it will be applied before. So obviously the implications are rather different if it happened one thing or happened the other. So I think we need to wait a little bit more and see how the events develop. But I tend to agree with Eduardo at the end. Having two brands or having one brand in co-promotion, you know, it's a commercial strategy by the companies that believe that they require a more share of voice. And obviously, the co-promotion requires a much more close-knit integration. and make the life of the management a little bit more difficult than that marketing. But we have managed both models quite successfully, and actually we have now a product in this status that is Combrita, which we just launched in cooperation with Pfizer, and is doing very well. So we are prepared to manage any kind of potential alliance.
Okay, regarding Ethira at ERS, we will see about 15 different posters and talks, and they will be a mixture of preclinical and looking at, for example, fibroblast function and lung function when you gave the clear for long term in animal models. We'll also see the some further results from the ATTAIN and the ACCORD studies, and we'll hold an evening symposium looking at further benefits of the CLIRA and trying to get to for physicians to understand the real benefits of the CLIRA. When it comes to the MARBA, we haven't spoken too much, but obviously we've benchmarked against the existing MARBAs or the known MARBAs, for example, the GSK. We believe that it's a very competitive molecule. It's a once daily, and we believe that it has a good balance between the anti-muscarinic and beta-2 side, which is the most important feature of the MARBA. So we're progressing, as we said, into clinical, and we're moving ahead with good faith.
Many thanks.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Eleanor Fung from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Good morning, all. This is Eleanor Fung from Goldman Sachs. Two questions, please, and unfortunately, first one on Spanish healthcare reform. Eduardo, you mentioned focus on G&A rationalization. Could you give us a sense of what further levers you might be able to pull for cost savings should there be further impact on sales decline, particularly in light of new product launches in 2013 and a fairly rich R&D program? And then secondly, on other revenues, could you help us think about the dynamics for Actonel and Combrisa royalties? Specifically, when will the relative royalties for those two products trend positively? Thanks.
Okay. Starting with the second one, I'm afraid that there is not much we can disclose on that one. I mean, this is sensitive information, and we have never given a specific guidance on cost of products royalties on a particular product. So sorry about that, but, you know, we hope you understand that we have to be sensitive about that kind of information. When it comes to additional measures that we could take in the company to manage the situation, I think it's basically given to give another turn to another round of some of the same things that we have been doing all over. I mean, it's relooking at the commercial structure, relooking at the promotional sensitivity that we have on key products, relooking at back office, etc. But again, we have been doing some of those things. I think that there is still potentially some room to do that, but we need to be careful once more in terms of how do we balance that with the capabilities required for the new launches. As I said earlier, yes, we could be affected in the short term somehow, depending again on the final shape of this reform. But I insist that the midterm fundamentals remain unchanged and that we still have a great opportunity ahead of us with the launch of the new products. We strongly believe that everything we have, starting with clinium bromide, Eclira, immunotherapy first, with linaclotide, later with a combo, and then also with Sativex, Acticaral, and the other products that we are launching in Spain, we have great prospects to make a good transition in our portfolio. So the short term may involve some pain, but the midterm, we remain very optimistic about the transformation of the company. So that's what we need to keep the focus on.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Jamie Clark from Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Hey, good morning. Three questions, please. The first question is that although your guidance is on hold, your previous guidance was for your R&D to go up high single digits year on year. Now, given your guidance is on hold, are you still planning on increasing your R&D by that amount? And if these healthcare reforms do come into place later in the year, would you still be looking to spend that amount on R&D? The second question, please, is you have in for your second half milestones a clearer partnering. Can you just give us an idea of what stage you're at with that, what parties you're talking to, how competitive the bidding for that product is, please? And thirdly, you also talked about your in-licensing pipeline. Can you just give us an idea of the number of products out there and what you think you could expect to sign later in the year? Thanks.
Okay. When it comes to R&D, indeed, at the beginning of the year, we gave a guidance for an increase in high single digits. The way we see it today, through a combination of basically managing the expenses, some studies that we are doing coming a bit cheaper than we anticipated, the view today is probably the evolution will be more kind of flattish for the whole year. When it comes to Europe partnering, as I think we indicated in the previous quarterly discussion, those are complicated discussions. Not that much because we had to get involved into discussing development plans and things like this, as we had to do in the past with Forest or also with Turin, but because you need to almost go country by country and discuss with the potential parties interested, what they could be in a position to do, analyze very well capabilities, again, country by country, etc. So the negotiations are progressing well. We have several companies interested in becoming potential partners at pan-European level as well as on a local level, but right now we keep the focus on the pan-European discussions. And I think that we remain on track towards eventually reaching an agreement before the end of this year. I mean, that was our goal, and I think that right now things are progressing in the appropriate direction. When it comes to in-licensing, I think that we continue to keep the focus on basically the same kind of priorities that we had in the past. So that means potential, again, co-promotion, co-marketing agreements in Spain and other countries in Europe where we have a strong commercial presence, as well as to continue to look into earlier stage opportunities in the therapeutic areas where we are strong, and particularly respiratory, dermatology, and gastrointestinal. So basically, we continue the same amount of efforts and with the same competent group of people that we have had in the past bringing interesting projects into the company.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Peter Welford from Jefferies. Please ask your question.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Firstly, I'm afraid I'm returning to the reforms again. With regards to the INN prescribing, first of all, can you perhaps give us some sort of visibility or describe the typical prescribing practices of doctors in Spain in terms of, I know from the UK experience, for example, you know, driving a shift to INN prescribing, even with the sort of automated computer systems when they work, is a pretty complicated process. So do you think that could actually be practical in Spain? And given the summer holidays that are approaching and therefore the likely government shutdown, you know, what is the sort of best case scenario for when there could be better visibility on the reform proposals in your view? And then the second question, I'm just wondering in Spain, sort of broader, bigger picture, are there smaller companies out there in Spain which perhaps given the reforms and given the situation are going to potentially end up in a very difficult situation? And would you perhaps consider being a key player in consolidation within the local market given that situation? Thank you.
Let me perhaps start with the last one, and I'll let Luciano manage the first one. I mean, definitely for Spanish companies, this has been, I mean, the reforms that took place last year and what is happening now is putting many companies in an extremely difficult situation. Indeed, I think that what you are mentioning may be correct, and perhaps some companies may be more open now to do perhaps M&A type of operations that perhaps they didn't consider in the past. Having said that, I have also to recognize that there are not too many things that we might be interested in Spain. Reason being that the level of synergies that we might see are still considered to be greater if we pursue opportunities outside of Spain, in Europe in particular. In Europe, in many of the countries where we operate, we still have opportunity to grow substantially our critical mass, more so as we are also interested in continue to build up resources for the launch of the newer products, while basically adding more capacity in Spain might not necessarily give us a lot of additional synergies or capabilities. It may bring the opportunities for some further cost rationalization. So we remain open to that, but again, it will not be our first priority as it has not been in the past. Luciano, you want to comment on the other one?
Well, regarding the prescription patterns in Spain, first of all, you have to recall that Spain is a regionalized nation Therefore, the practices of prescription are rather different between the different regions, because also the local government has responsibility and resources to manage that. So you have regions like, for instance, Andalusia, where the generic prescription, in fact, already exists, and it's now more or less accounting for around 95% or 90-something percent of the overall prescription that the doctors write. However, the doctors can also prescribe by brand. And so this has not been precluded, and only when generics, let's say, are available, the system, let's say, somehow drives the doctors to prescribe by ENN. There are other regions where this is not the case, so it depends and varies changes region by region. However, I must also say that in Spain, in general, prescription by automatic system or by electronic system is quite common. It's now more or less the norm. I would say that probably across Spain today, maybe more than 80% of the overall prescriptions are written electronically through the systems that the state has put, let's say, in the hands of the doctors, which obviously gives the authorities a substantial leverage if they decide to change products or to act in order to manage the prescription in a different way.
I think you're right, Peter, in the sense that, you know, changing habits is not an easy thing to do. And at least both the medical community as well as the pharmacist community, not to mention wholesalers, have expressed clearly some opinion against the proposal in the healthcare reform. So, again, this will not be an easy thing to implement. That is clear.
That's great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Edward Dulac from Barclays Capital. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. A few questions, please. Just firstly, on working capital and specifically on the higher receivables that were outlined in the presentation and the commentary this morning, is that primarily a function of these regional governments in Spain not being able to pay for product? There has been some news around that topic. And can you give us a sense of the trends that you are seeing recently around that average payment period in this regard? And do you anticipate that things get much worse from where you are today? And secondly, regarding Aclidinium, just a follow-up on the ERS question, can we expect any data specifically around the CORD 2 study in September? And then lastly, to revisit the reform question, I understand there's another potential component which may be less relevant but a little bit unclear to me in regards to the formation of a new committee, potentially both central and regional government representation, to kind of assess clinical benefits, costs, et cetera, to determine maybe a subset of drugs that are actually reimbursed by the NHS. Just want to get your general commentary on the viability, how well central and regional governments might be able to work together, and if there's any kind of historical precedent that suggests such a process might be successful. Thanks.
Okay. Let me face the question about the working capital. So as we were communicating, this higher account receivable is mainly driven by the growth of our international business. So as you know, we have a very good day sales outstanding in Almirall. However, the mix depends on if the sales are in Spain or outside. Outside, because of the good performance that we have had in several countries in May and June, in certain geographies that they have normal longer terms than in Spain, this is where we have a higher account receivable, something which is expected by us because it's part of the forecast that we were having, but this is not because of overdues or whatever. So for us, it's an expected amount. And regarding the industry, the pressure on the industry about collections, remember that first, for Almirall, we have a very, very small hospital business, which this is the main problem that other companies can face. This is not our case. You know that this is really, really small. And second, what I can tell you is that right now we have a very, very clean account receivables balance sheet position with no major overdue. So I hope that this helps you. Bertil?
Yeah. Regarding the ACCORD study, we will see improvements in three posters, improvements in nighttime symptoms, rescue medication, the safety and tolerability of twice-daily Aclidinium in CVD patients, and the third one is about the quality of life and dyspnea improvement in CVD patients. So you will get more data regarding the ACCORD study.
Well, regarding your third question, it is true that in the original proposal there is a
vague reference to the fact that the authorities will establish some kind of risk-value-benefit analysis. But I must say that this has already been in place for some time. In fact, in Spain, when you end up presenting the regulatory dossier, normally you present also a pharmacoeconomic analysis to the health authorities, and then you normally have to also, through the local authorities, presenting value dossiers and discussing with them cost benefits. So in order to be included in the protocols and in the prescription facility. So I would say that it's unclear at this stage what weight would this carry and how this would be implemented, but let's say maybe it's a way to articulate it a little bit more homogeneously than it has been done up to now. So we have to wait and see how this develops.
I mean, the way I see it is that this is more like a sort of a stated direction they would like to follow, but nothing specific has been said, and it will probably take some time to articulate something like that. In any case, I think that for us, you know, we work on value dossiers to really be able to address this kind of discussions in many other European markets, so I don't think that it will require to do anything new, and I think that we are equipped to deal with that. I don't think also that it will bring us much difference. I mean, Spain is now still not necessarily among the first countries to approve new products, and also with a price that has been below the European average. So again, I'm not sure that you know, what they plan to do is going to change that picture into a different one, because it's not necessarily wanted that positive. But in any case, I think that we are equipped to deal with that if it happens.
Thank you.
Your final question comes from Christian Quaid from JB Capital Markets. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Just a couple. On the rollout of Doctino and Sativex, and, when do you expect to be fully deployed in these licensed markets? And also, are the pricing holding up as expected? And secondly, or a couple more questions then. If you can give a little, again, a sense of the peak they're expecting for the Tesavel and Efficib franchise, as well as for, let me hold that, and I'll ask you another question later.
Okay, regarding the Toctino and Sativex, as you know, Toctino we have introduced in Italy and in Austria, and we are now in discussions with several authorities about the pricing and the financing and the funding of the products in different geographies in Europe, the ones that we have, some of the ones that we have rights. We are obviously aiming for a price that is more or less even, and this is creating some difficulties in the discussion, so we cannot anticipate exactly when we will be able to win these barriers, but we are working hard to be able to do it at the earliest time. Regarding Sativex, so far we have had no major issues with the pricing. Obviously, we have to justify the price, and we have a significant value dossier and analytical studies to prove the value of the product to the patients. And so far, we have gone through approvals in Spain, Germany, Denmark, and Sweden, and we are hoping and expecting to have some other territories in Europe soon. Although sometimes, you know, in some countries the process is more long and cumbersome, like for instance in Italy,
yeah,
or in Slovakia, where you only have two slots a year to present the price proposal. So if you miss one slot, then you have to wait 6 months to go for the second slot, you know, so there's no possibility to apply in between. So this drives somehow the timing and the dynamics of the pricing of the product. But obviously, we are trying to go for a price that is more or less homogeneous across Europe, and which represent the value that we perceive the product brings to the patients and to the healthcare systems.
Thanks. Touching on the reformer, related to the reform, you have three key products coming off patent in the next 12 months: Epistel, Parapress, and Operin. And Esercia is already experiencing generics on the market. Are you expecting generics to be available ahead of the patent expires for these, for the first three key products? And then the last question would be, would you know at this point whether the reformer would mean that prescription and prescription filling would be as soon as products are off patent, or... or does it have to be, as I mean, is it at the point of generics being available, or would it be at the point when the when the products come off patent?
Well, what products are you referring to? Because Almogran has patent until 2014 in some countries.
Epastel and Parapress and Opiren.
Well, for Parapress, there are different situations. You know, as you know, there are patents in for some of the products and not for some of the others, because it's not just one single product. It's a combination. In any case, I think that we normally do not disclose patent situations for products that were licensees. So if you want to have this information, you should address probably Takeda, which is the one who can disclose you the full information about the patent situation of this product, because we are not necessarily knowledgeable about of the patent the status of each and single product in the different countries in Europe. So regarding Tesabel and Efitib that you asked before, we have disclosed in the past, and it's a well-known fact by the market, that the there are different components of the patent strategy that we have for Avastel. So let's say the product based patent expired many years ago. So I think it was 2002, 2003, and then we have two kind of protections. One which was linked to the flash tablet, you know, which is expiring. I think is at the end of this year. And then there is the micronized patent that is also expiring somehow at the end of 2012. So now, however, you know, these patents are sometimes controversial, and some generic companies are trying to find ways around them. So we cannot discard that some of them may try to bust the patent as they try in the past, and in some countries we have prevailed, in some others we did not.
But in any case, I mean, the what has been put at this point on the table, linked to this new healthcare reform, will not necessarily expedite or accelerate the arrival of generics. What may change is the impact linked to that and connected to the reference price mechanism, because up to now there was a sort of gradual implementation on the decrease in prices, etc., and now that is what will be accelerated. So more than the arrival per se of new generics or to be able to leave the or open the door for a quicker arrival of generics is more actually the impact related to the mechanism of price referencing.
Let me also state that it is unclear at this stage if even if the new system applies, that if you are at a price similar to generic, the pharmacies will not be able to prescribe your product, because this has been up to now the normal situation where when you were at reference pricing, the pharmacies still have the possibility to dispense your branded product if the doctor prescribes it. So it's unclear at this stage how this will end, but we hope for the best, that this will remain as it is today.
Okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your participation today, and have a nice day. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.